It's pretty natural in a podcast like this to go into things that you know about, to teach people and give them information about things you've learned and subjects you've either mastered or come close to mastering. And to do something in the inverse this time, I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about a handful of subjects that I just simply know nothing about. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. I'm Jason Scott. Thanks to Brenda Romero, Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters who are helping make this podcast possible and helping me get out of debt. It's just too easy to have some subjects in your back pocket that you've learned about over the years and then just recount everything you've built up about them and act like it's a day. I thought I'd go for something more challenging. There are a number of situations and subjects that people assume I know. They just mention them to me and move on because, of course, I know them. I must be an expert. That's just a given. But I don't. So let's walk through them and then see how I got to that lack of knowledge and see if there's anything to be learned from that. I can't touch type. I don't touch type the way that people are supposed to, where you have both of your hands on the keyboard, usually on some home resting nub, and then type so you don't have to look at the screen. I don't do that. What I've done instead, and I think it goes back all the way to working alone at my father's house with a Commodore PET chiclet keyboard, a device of torture I wish on nobody. But I built up this habit of a two-fingered typing system with a slight modification to allow my thumb and pinkies to play a part that I can type in pretty fast. It kind of shocks people when I do webcasts and happen to have my hands in the shot. It's like watching Hunt and Peck at light speed. I can do anywhere between 60 and 70 words per minute without touch typing. This weird method has worked for me to the point that I don't have to look at the keyboard when I do it. And it's interesting because I have a theory. I've never had anything like wrist pain, carpal tunnel syndrome, anything related to overworking the tendons in my hands, and I think that it goes to the fact that I never really exercise my wrists. All of the work is being done by my arms, by the upper arms, as I move my fingers around the keyboard. It's something that turns out to have allowed me to miss out on that part. I have so many memories of friends with these little wristbands or gloves or being forced to hold their keyboards in a certain position because the years of work have made their hands basically wrecked. Carpal tunnel is a dangerous, problematic syndrome. If you've got it, if you are experiencing shooting pains in your hands when you type, please don't ignore them. I have a battleground of touch typing littered with the functioning arms of my friends who just worked themselves into pain. And when you live on a keyboard and you can't type with it, it's torture indeed. Richard Stallman had this happen to him. He totally wrecked his arms. So for a good number of years, Richard Stallman had to hire typists, and these typists would do the typing for him while he shouted at them what to do. This is one of the worst jobs you could ever imagine. Richard Stallman is not a kind-hearted person, and having somebody take his thoughts and turn them into keys in a way that he doesn't like, it's just not anything I'd wish on anyone. Every once in a while, I'll mention this story about him, and somebody will say to me, quietly, "Yeah, I was one of his typists." In the same way that someone might say, "Yeah, I murdered 30 people on that hill." It's just, please, take care of your arms, folks. Just don't let another Richard Stallman typist situation occur. Another thing that people assume I know, and I simply don't, is soldering. I've never soldered. I've never taken a soldering iron and done what it was supposed to do. I don't particularly have an urge to, But it's one of those things that people just assume you do when you're young. My father didn't buy a soldering kit. I didn't really have an interest in hardware and electronics. And so I just never got it. And if you want a familial link to it, which may or may not be valid, my grandfather was a car mechanic, among other things, and he had a belief that he did not want his son to become a car mechanic. And as a result, my father was kept away from the garage, the family business. He never learned the inside of cars. He couldn't name a part inside of it. My grandfather would give him clunkers to drive around and play with, but he was completely disconnected from that technical part. So soldering never happened. I never learned anything about ham radio. It's considered to be hand in hand that if you ran or worked with BBSs, you probably took an interest in ham radio, and I simply didn't. As time has gone on, I have ambiently picked up some facts about ham radio. I understand why people like it. I archive things related to ham radio, documents and writings and programs. I mean, everything related to it. But ham radio is not something that's ever been in my life. Never learned Morse code for it, therefore. Never really learned all of the call signals that you're supposed to use. I don't know them other than 73 as a way of saying goodbye. But again, this is all ambient. I'm not a ham radio operator. Never have been. Never really understood it in the way a person should understand it. Programming. Now, I can program in a rough sort of way, but I mostly use a scripting language called Bash, the Bourne Again shell, B-O-U-R-N-E, and I have basically cargo culted my way through it. Now, I use the phrase cargo cult, and I've discovered, along the theme of this show, many people have heard that term or they hear it and they don't quite know what's going on, so I'm going to be your buddy and explain it right now. Cargo culting refers to a phenomenon where planes were dropping supplies and they would land on tropical islands or islands with tribes that were not really developed. And they would see these miraculous machines go through the sky, drop packages full of amazing things. And so they would build airstrips or lights or things to attract down these planes without understanding why the planes were doing what they were doing. They just wanted that cool thing to happen again. And so they just screwed around with all sorts of charms and attempts to lure them down. And so they were basically cults around cargo planes, cargo cults. And to cargo cult means that you are looking at something in a real surface way. You see that somebody walked through a door and they got prizes, and then you try to figure out the easiest way to walk through that door without understanding the prizes, why you were given the prizes, what the door has to do with it. And in programming, I would cargo cult. I would look at code others had written, figure out that this part kind of did this, screw with it, but not really understand what I was doing, and make things often incredibly worse. I still do this. I have people doing amazing, complicated compiler work with the emulators and with support programs, and I'll want to show I think this is a worthwhile project, so I'll get, quote, involved, and I will often leave it much worse than I found it. I just simply don't program in the way that I think most people think of programming. You know, the computer science, understanding memory management, understanding how to make your code do work and then be readable and obvious and then allow it to be modified or modular. I don't understand any of that. I can't program in C. I can't program in C++. I can't really do Perl. I have one or two Perl programs in my life. And again, these were all done by major amounts of guesswork, and they are obviously incredibly inefficient. I've had people look at my code and say, you know, you do the same thing 45 times when you only have to do it once. And I go, thank you. I had no idea. Luckily, machines have increased in speed that fools like myself don't make it terrible. I do a lot of scripting, like I said, in Bash, but that's mostly calling other programs that know what they're doing to do the right thing. It was so important to me when Jake Johnson created the Internet Archive client 5 or 6 years ago, because that is 99% of how I interact with the Internet Archive. I write scripts that basically call this other script, and there you go. Do I want to learn it? Not particularly. I mean, I could become a mediocre developer, or I could let people who believe in this work, who are good in it, they should be the ones doing the work. I'll just build a relatively decent program that others will look at and wonder, what was this guy thinking? And all this guy was thinking was, I hope the next cargo plane comes soon. Alcohol. I have never drank alcohol. I've never had a beer. I've never had whiskey. I've never had gin, a mixed drink, a cocktail. I have never, ever done that. I've wondered why this might be the case for me and not for many others. I think a lot of it came down to I missed out on that critical period in your youth when alcohol is freedom, when you're trying something new and you want to either escape from something or you want to do things that other people are doing, you know, the classic peer pressure argument. But it just comes down to when I was 12 or 13, truly suicidal and miserable, I made this arrangement with my father to go live with him. And then I moved to a new school, new people, rebuilt my character, rebooted my life, and so I missed it. I just missed that need to make myself drunk. I don't have any desire. I don't need anything like a social lubricant to interact with people. I'm just naturally fine with interacting with people. So it's not a brag per se. It's just something I never did. And so I have been to so many parties and events stone cold sober. And the alcohol culture of the hacker scene has no grip on me. I was always kind of weirded out by the fact that people thought that alcohol was a necessary part of the technological process, and I have never engaged in it. I would just watch as people got weirder and dumber and louder, and then eventually leave when I had nobody to talk to. I would go to these hacker conventions and the alcohol worship. The pure pride in getting the most alcohol into the most people has nothing to do with me. To me, it's just lost hours. I just do my own thing then and make the most of the time and try to eke out an understanding of what's going on and try to talk to my friends before they've had too many drinks. It's a weird, weird situation. People think, wow, you're 47 years old. You've never had a drink. You should have a drink. You know, that weird thing where people say, oh man, we have to get you drunk. No, it will never work, and I will end the conversation. I have ended many conversations that include the phrase, we have to get you drunk. You really don't have to get me drunk. As a similar situation, I've never had illegal drugs. Now, I'm an American. I've had lots of prescription drugs. I currently take 6. I have drugs for my blood pressure, for my acidic blood that causes kidney stones if it's not handled. I have drugs to thin out my blood, to change how my heart pumps because of the heart attack. So I'm definitely on some sort of drugs. But I've never had illegal drugs or drugs that were designed to make me weird, like alcohol and smoking. You know, I just never hit me. Smoking to me is particularly strange. And when I see young people smoke, I just feel so bad. It's just so on the surface terrible for you. And I don't know. I mean, I understand addiction, but the justifications that are given to me for why you smoke, man, that's one tough hill for me. I care about people, and I look at smoking as this long-term suicide, and I feel like what it gives you could be gotten elsewhere. You know, my father smoked until I was born, and after I was born, he struggled with getting rid of smoking, and I would find his matches and throw them into a sink or garbage because I knew he didn't want them, and he eventually gave them up. And so in his 70s, they found cancer in him, in his bladder, from the smoking. So it's just one of those things that I never really built onto. And again, I understand and I respect if people have this lifestyle choice, but it won't ever be mine. Except for this one time. There's always an exception, right? There was one time. So there I was, working as a DJ in Lake Placid, New York. Series of comedic situations had led to this. I was about 17. And I was there for a few weeks doing DJ stuff with another DJ. And just for some reason, I didn't get along with some of the staff. I don't know why. And they were just kind of cruel. It was a place of just people having fun. There were a couple people, like I said, didn't like the DJs. And one day, one of them offered me a drink. And they offered me anything from the bar, which I wanted basically soda. And so they reached over, got a cup, gave me some soda. And later that night, I started to feel pretty weird. You know, if you're not thinking, I totally understand how people can drug your drink and not know about it. It happened to me. Whatever they put in there, that got me pretty high. I was sitting around the house we were staying in Lake Placid, and I just started to feel really weird. The world just started to kind of shift and fall apart, and I was looking in the mirror, and I couldn't recognize my own face, and I stumbled around my kitchen, scared, and I started to write weird poetry and make weird connections, and I said, okay, what happened? And I thought, people who don't like me gave me a drink. Oh, they must have had it in the styrofoam cup and then let me choose. A classic magician's trick. I was focused on the wrong part. So I spent the next 6 or 7 hours super high, just messed up. Like I said, writing the worst poetry of my life, just sitting around, shaking, wondering if I was going to be like this forever. It was a terrible night. And the next day, I remember coming in and just yelling at somebody going, I think they dosed me. I think they gave me some drugs. And he said, hey, man, what's the big deal? It was probably just some acid. Well, that to me was not being given the gift of being given acid. As far as I was concerned, I had been poisoned. They had no idea what that would do to me, no idea what the effect was. And if there was ever, ever a lingering moment that I was thinking about having drugs from that point on, it ended there. So, at 47 years old, I've never had a smoke, I've never had a drug on purpose, I've never had alcohol. I feel very connected, if you will, to reality, to what we really are, to understand ourselves as best we can. And while I absolutely understand that people want to expand their minds, I really only have one meat sack to get things done with. And I already have my missions in life. I know what I want to do. So for me, there isn't really a soul-searching internal feel that needs to be done by shutting off part of my brain. I don't need anything to make myself not quite understand what's going on. I don't need a warm cloud of confusion and happiness to be happy. Again, it's not a case of lecturing people. This is just where my journey has taken me. And for some people, that's going to be uninteresting news, not relevant to the way they live their lives. But my hope is that maybe there's a few people in my audience or who hear this who say, oh, good, there is somebody else. There is me. And if you haven't, you're not weird. You're not strange. You're not bad. You're not doing the wrong thing. It's just a choice you make. Over the years, I've watched it get classified as straight edge. The fact is that it's just making a choice to focus on different things. I'm sure there's many other things that people think I've done that I haven't. So here's to doing nothing, to not doing something, to being, perhaps to some people, a little boring about, but knowing it's you. And being what you are and knowing what you are with yourself, that's the thing it would be sad if you never did. This is Jason Scott. You've been listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Sam Johnston, and the hundreds of other supporters who I hope will raise a glass of whatever they really like to drink. Things are doing very well on the debt front. After this month's payment, I'm going to pay off another medical bill that I have that is only a routine heart work that just says that I'm doing very well. That's something I'm more than happy to pay for. And the usual living expenses just need to be cut down here and there. I'm very happy with where I am now, thanks to you. Maybe I'll do an episode at some point on some of my weirdest debts I've had over the years. Until next time, be proud of what you've done, but also be proud of what you've not done.